And now, from the Fortress of Solitude, deep beneath the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, sci-fi4me.com presents The Rogues Gallery.
Welcome, everyone, to this special edition of the Rogues Gallery podcast. We are talking Wonder Woman tonight, and we will talk a little bit of Gotham later. Because we must, because the finale was this, okay.
And being a DC podcast, yeah, and all that stuff.
But we're going to talk Wonder Woman first. My name is Jason Hunt. I'm the editor here at sci-fi4me.com. Joining me here in studio, Mindy Inlow.
Hi, everyone.
Without her Borg implants. And Dan Handley is here as well.
Hello, hello.
And joining from parts around the country, from New York, Maria Foss is here.
Hello, everyone.
And in Kansas City, Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And from Fort Worth, Texas, where ACON is going on this weekend, Mr. Jeff Hackworth.
Hello, hello.
Jeff, are you going to be going to ACON at all?
I do not know yet.
Okay.
But if I do, I will let you guys know.
Lots of pictures. Okay, so we've all seen this little movie.
Mm-hmm.
Called Wonder Woman.
We were supposed to see that for this?
Yeah.
I did not see it yet. I'm preparing to see it tomorrow. I've heard a lot about it.
Oh, well, okay.
Spoilers.
This warning, spoilers. We are going to get into a lot of spoilers tonight because...
I don't really mind too much. Some people have already spoiled me on something, so okay. I'm okay.
All right, so my son is actually seeing it tonight. We did send out an invitation to both Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot to join us, but
awesome.
Neither one of them were available, sadly. So,
yes.
One of these days, we will have a lot of celebrities available.
They're going to just be lining up because we want to be with you guys.
It's sci-fi for me. We got to do this.
I laugh. All right. So, let's just do real quick first impressions around the room, very fast. One or two sentences, what'd you think? And then we'll get into details, though, because there's a lot of discussion online about everything, box office and the complaining and the feminism and everything is being scrutinized six ways from Sunday on this movie because of what it is and what it represents. So what I want to do is go around real quick before... First impressions, Mindy, we'll start with you, and we'll just circle around.
I liked it. It was fun. For having very little background with Wonder Woman, except for watching a TV show back in the day, a little bit, learning more about where she came from, all that background story, it made me laugh, and you were entertained the entire time.
I laughed. I cried.
I kissed how many dollars goodbye?
Yeah.
That was Hardware Wars. Sorry.
Yeah. All right. Oh, yes, that's right.
You'll laugh.
You'll cry. You'll kiss $3 goodbye.
Yes. All right, Dan, what'd you think?
Well,
it tells you when that movie was made, by the way.
Yeah, really? No kidding. Well, in this day and age, though, $3 for the fan film probably wouldn't be out of the question for a 2-minute. Peace. All right, Dan, what do you think?
Well, visually, it was a bit darker than I would have liked, but otherwise, I absolutely loved it. It was huge, huge improvement over on the previous DC films.
Yeah, I think so as well. Jeff, what do you think?
I give this a solid 9 out of 10. I love the colors, the action, the characters. I even dug the war scenes. They were gritty and action-packed. It's a solid 9 out of 10. I really like it. It's getting DC back where it needs to be.
All right, Tim?
I really, really liked it. I thought it was extremely well handled. I think everywhere from a very, very solid script, a really nice way of handling the naivete of a character.
Yeah.
And then exposing that character to the evil what men do, and handling it really, really well. I thought it was a great if this was the first time we had seen her, this would have been a great introduction to the character. or people who don't know a lot about her.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and I think too the one thing that I wrote down on my notes was the color. You know, the fact that there actually is some that's not not desaturated, you know, put the Snyder filter on everything and
And that's the one thing I've always been complaining about when we do these reviews. I'm like, it needs more color.
Yeah.
It needs more color. And then in this film, from like the opening shot, colors more than just black and gray and brown.
Well, and I read an interview with the cinematographer, and I can't remember his name right off the top of my head, but he said that he had very specific discussions with Patty Jenkins about the color palette being such that Themyscira is all blues and teals and that color group, where London, instead of London being gray fog all the time, there's also browns and rusts and reds and to mix in, or wood tones and that kind of thing, wood grains. And then the battle sequences, of course, have their own palette, and all of the different locations have very specific color palettes that are involved, and they all pop. It's really nice to see how all of that comes together, and there's a very specific intent to all of those different things as far as the design of the colors in the sequences.
Another good color contrast is whenever she uses her lasso.
Yeah,
it contrasts the bright gold contrasts nice against the darker war setting.
That's going to be my one main quibble on this movie, because there are some of the battle sequences, it's very, very obvious CG.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when she uses the lasso to wrap around somebody and throw them and do whatever, and you get the wide sweeping shots. The CG on that is so terribly obvious, and I have to wonder why, because they can do this better. They do it on Supergirl better.
I have a theory on that, and it kind of plays into a larger thing I was planning on talking about, because, one of my major complaints and observations about what Snyder tried to do with the Man of Steel and what we've gone through, and what's made part of the whole backlash against other films, has been his attempt to root this in the real world and the consequences of do not stare directly at the superhero movie, because you end up with a metropolis full of dead bodies.
Right.
And you end up with, there is an inherent flaw with applying superhero reality to the world we live in. And, that's just what Snyder did. Here, they do something different that automatically changes everything, because you cannot root gods and immortal Amazons in the real world. You just can't.
Right.
I mean, we've stepped into magic territory here. And once you've done that, everything changes. The lasso is a very curious thing, because we've never really, even in Batman v Superman, you really only got the lasso in tiny doses. Here, because it becomes a thing, and a thing that is used, they had to do something with it. And as I was watching it, I'm looking at it going, what are the physics of this lasso? And then I thought, I can't think of it as physics. It's a magic item. And it doesn't behave right. If you watch the way the lasso moves, lengths of rope don't do that. And so once I got that into my head, that, hang on, that's just not how they move. I don't know that it's a question of bad CGI as much as it is a question of everybody knows there's a part of your brain that's saying rope doesn't do that. It didn't bother me in terms of the CGI. What bugged me was the fact that until I sat there and went, stop thinking about it, it moved wrong.
Do not stare directly at the comic book.
Exactly. Exactly. But I think it's one of those things where your brain knows. It's like looking at animated water or CGI water.
Yep.
When it's not right, you know that it doesn't look right to you because you know water doesn't look like that.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing here, and I think that it's, you know, but it's a magic item, so the rules don't apply. And so once I got over that, I was just like, that's just really cool.
I think for me it wasn't so much the fact that the lasso moved differently, it's Diana was obviously CG in those scenes, and it knocked me out for just a little bit because it wasn't seamless. There wasn't a point where you sit there and go, "Oh, I didn't see where they switched."
Was it more of a color balancing issue, or
I don't know? It was almost like it was almost like CG Diana wasn't blended in properly. She wasn't fully space.
Color balancing.
I have a theory on that too because I noticed that as well. When it comes to the CG Superman or the CG Batman, they are in environments that are a lot of sharp lines. They're in a city format, right?
Right.
But with a lot of the scenes of the CG with Diana happened out on a field. It happened out on the World War I battlefield, and that is a much less forgiving environment. There's a lot more curves. There's a lot more. There are a lot fewer straight lines.
Yeah, but the place.
But it's a lot more nature.
Yeah, but where I saw it most obvious was in the city, right before she destroyed the clock tower, right there in the city square, in the village. The worst part of it.
Well, parts of Diana are going to be CGI also because in an interview on one of the late night talk shows, Gal Gadot said that she was pregnant during some of those scenes.
Yeah,
and so they did have to CGI her to make her look fluid throughout
the film. Yeah, she was 5 months pregnant.
While still doing her own stunts, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking of Wonder Woman.
Well,
exactly.
some of that is undoubtedly her military training.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, her physical training for the Israeli Defense Force, which is source for plenty of controversy. Mm-hmm. I saw something the other day. Feminists saying she's not feminist enough. Progressives saying, oh, she was in the military. We can't, you know. And then, of course, you got the complaints that she's Israeli. Some complaints that she's not white, so she's not really a person of color because she's too white to be a person of color, but she's a person of color. She's not white. I mean, all of these different things. Fine, nobody could put her into a box, but you put her into a box and you've got somebody else that's complaining about her.
And then some people are complaining that because of her accent, all of the Amazons had to adopt her accent on the island, too.
I read that Robin Wright was the only one who had to affect an accent because Connie Nielsen has an accent. Mm-hmm. Gal Gadot has an accent. And really, none of the others really had very much in the way of lines. But some of them more than likely would have had an accent because all of them were Olympic athletes from all over the world, you know,
amazing.
Triathlons and decathlons and Olympians and whatever. I thought that was really cool that they did that.
And an accent, the accent works because, well, they're supposed to be Greek to begin with.
Right.
I mean,
so
a Greek derivative.
The other thing, I saw a meme, we have lived long enough to see our favorite princesses become generals.
Yes.
You know, because you've got Robin Wright now as
Princess Buttercup.
Antiope.
And
Leia.
Carrie Fisher.
General Leia Organa. That was kind of cool. Speaking of Connie Nielsen and Hippolyta. I wrote a note down here. After seeing the movie, you know, we were all sitting there saying, well, Linda Carter should play her mom, you know, do the whole passing the baton thing. I don't think Linda Carter would have been up to the physicality of it, because this queen was a lot more active than any other version that we've seen on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure Linda Carter could have done it.
Even in the cartoons, I mean, back to Super Friends and all this stuff, Hippolyta didn't really do a whole lot of action.
I mean, she had a little bit in Justice League Unlimited.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. But, yeah, not
was
like this.
Was she in the Wonder Woman animated movie? I don't remember.
She was, yeah, but she didn't.
I don't remember her doing much in that.
She didn't. It was, you know, you can't go and do the challenge and, oh, well, you won, so here's all the stuff and, you know, that. So it's the typical what we see of her. But in this movie, we get a lot more action for her in addition to all of the rest of the Amazons.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I thought it was,
which is a nice touch, by the way, considering that in post-crisis, that was the explanation for the World War II Wonder Woman.
Right.
It wasn't Diana in World War II.
Right, it was her mom. I'm going to put this out there. The Superman 78 callback.
Oh, that was great.
It was. There's a clip of it online.
Which one? There are more than one.
Well, the clip, Patty Jenkins is explaining that scene, where that scene came from. It is an intentional, deliberate homage to the scene in the first Superman movie with Chris Reeve, where they got mugged in the alley.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the discovery of powers, basically. And, you know, you get somebody ends up with a bullet, you know, a smushed bullet in their hand, and there's the deflection, and there's the fainting, and there's all of this stuff. And she said that's a direct result of seeing that movie. And then earlier this week, Jeff Johns and Kevin Feige, who both worked for Richard Donner back in the day, they were at a tribute to Richard Donner earlier this week. And Kevin Feige dropped this little nugget saying that for pretty much almost all of the Marvel movies before they go into production, they watch that film.
Wow.
Oh.
And Feige says that is the archetype to which all of the others aspire. And it sets the mood. It sets the tone. And you look at Superman 78 and the way that movie has fun with the character, but still pays respect to the character.
And it didn't deviate from the character.
And the Marvel movies don't either. And now we finally get a DC movie that feels like somebody over there gets it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, note also that this is the first DC Comics film with Jeff Johns and John Berg in the credits. And I have to wonder, besides the fact that Patty Jenkins is the director, and, you know, you've as much as Mr. Harvey might poo-poo it, gender politics more than likely had a lot to play in this. The studio probably sat there and said, if we say anything, people are going to crucify us for, you know, interfering with the one directed by the woman. And if it fails, then it'll fail because it's a woman. I mean, you don't have a way to win on any of this. So they probably left her alone a little bit more than they otherwise would have. Just go make the movie. You know, by this point, Warner Brothers is probably sitting there going, it can't be any worse than the rest of them, right? And if it's better, then great. We can, you know, we'll rake in the money and say that was the plan all along.
Figure out how to use this now.
But it's interesting that out of all of the DC films, this is the first one where we've heard the same thing like we've heard over at the Marvel films, where Superman the movie is the template. Although, I have...
Well, even that revolving door scene.
Yeah, yeah, that's the other one. I was like, Superman. After that, I was halfway expecting somebody to say that something was swell. But it didn't happen. But I also, the other thing that I noticed, too, I made a note. This is Warner Brothers and DC's Captain America. Because if you look at, I made a list, you look at everything that happens in Wonder Woman, everything that happens in Wonder Woman happens in Captain America. Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. There's a frame.
Including
there's
the noble sacrifice.
Yes, the noble sacrifice. You've got the naive hero, you know, who feels compelled to fight the bad guys. I don't want to fight, you know, Steve Rogers even says, I don't want to kill anybody, but I don't like bullies. You know, and Wonder Woman's, Ares is out there. This was our job. This is our task. We have to go do this. I don't want to, but we're the only ones who can. They both have a shield. They're both fighting in a world war.
That's one thing that jumped out at me.
Yeah, they moved Wonder Woman back to World War One, but her origins are World War II, so she's in a world war. Captain America's in a world war. They both have super-powered villains, Ares and the Red Skull. They have the inspired mentor that dies, the Obi-Wan character, the Merlin character. For Wonder Woman, it's Antiope. And for Steve Rogers, it's Dr. Erskine.
And
you know, they both die.
And you say both have the superpowered enemy. And here's the thing. It's not a remote it's not a remote origin superpower. It's a similar origin superpowers.
Yeah, physically all of the skills and the abilities are similar between the two characters too.
That you had on the Captain America Red Skull where both the super soldier serum based
type of thing.
Whereas Wonder Woman and Ares were both descended, you know, came from
demigods
from Zeus.
You have the romantic interest in the military, Steve Trevor, Peggy Carter, who are both very smart, very intelligent.
They're
not
spies.
They're not played as the damsel in distress character. They're both very capable.
They don't play as inferior.
And that's right. And they're both intelligence. They're both spies.
The bombs. Red Skull has the Tesseract bombs. Ares has got we get the gas nerve bombs. Right? We've got
their
that scene. The ragtag bunch of misfits,
yes.
That's right. Neither one of them are taken seriously at the beginning of their journey. You have the moment of truth for both of them. For Diana, it's no man's land. It's like, there's a city over there. We have to go help them. And Steve is like, we can't get there. And she's like, oh, sure we can. Let's just go. And she goes. And she makes the decision, despite everybody thinking, you can't do it. She goes and does it. Captain America does the same thing. This factory is way back here behind enemy lines. He goes and he saves the people.
It's
he
like they need that meme on that you see on the internet right now. We can't do this. Hold my beer.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you know, she's not taken seriously because she's a woman. He's not taken seriously because he's a clown. He's a USO monkey, right? You know, he's a clown in a costume. They both have this one big last final battle fight thing, right? You have the scientist working for the bad guy, Dr. Zola. Maru and Dr. Zola.
Yeah.
You know, and there are modern day framing scenes in the both of them. Captain America.
It's the Arctic.
It's the Arctic and then New York. Yeah. And then in Wonder Woman, it's Paris. Although why Diana is working at the Louvre, who knows. But the only reason that scene is there is to put Batman in this movie. Now with more Batman. We make the joke, now with more Batman. But it really is. Now with more Batman. Batman's got to be in every single one.
And it's also kind of trying to directly tie to the previous film, Batman v Superman, by using that same photo. Now he says, all right, here's the original. You'll have to tell me the story.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. It's interesting that it would be so close. I mean, they're not in the exact same sequence of things, but all of those elements are there. And I have to wonder if
no. Okay. Let me throw a little variant thought into that. Remember, of course, again, that all Marvel movies follow the same basic plot line. That's been something that people have pointed out more than once. And anytime you're going to set a film during a war, a comic book movie during a war, you're going to play with a lot of the same toolbox. Yes,
well, yeah.
There's a lot of this that looks just, that is very much like Captain America. In some ways, the kind of story you're telling, if you deviated from it too much, you wouldn't be telling a Wonder Woman story.
Well, I know, and I'm not saying it was a bad thing. I'm just saying I recognize a lot of these elements are in both of those movies, and I think that works to Wonder Woman's credit as a film, because they're modeling after movies that work.
Oh well, yeah. I think I've mentioned in one scenario or another on LE7 a long time back that, you know, you find a lot of these movies following the same thing, and I point out the book Save the Cat. Mm-hmm. And you find that a lot. It's a screenwriting book that came out in around 2005, and now you find that a lot of movies, it's like you've seen them before because they're following the same thing. It breaks down. Here's where the beats are. Here's where things are. And you know, you get into certain types of stories. Your superhero stories, that type of thing, are going to share a lot of the same elements. You're not going to get around that.
Right.
And so whether it was a direct modeling or how much of it was direct, how much was coincidental. One way or another, it's going to follow along the same line if it's going to be successful, intentional or not.
Yeah, Jeff, were you had something to throw in there?
I was going to say, if you were going to compare it to any of the Marvel movies, it would be a mix between Thor and Captain America, just because of the mythological perspective. You know,
right.
You're adding that also.
Well, except that Captain goes America that mind. Goes to Tim's point, where, you know, in the Marvel movies, it stays relatively grounded because Thor is an alien; he's not a god.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
right.
here, I mean, you he's, didn't he's get treat, magic.
He's treated as a god,
right? Well, yeah,
the Asgardians in the mythology,
were. But you didn't get magic introduced until Doctor Strange, and that's what their 10th, 11th film,
something like that.
Yeah. And now Wonder Woman blows that door wide open. Here it is. In are we counting Green Lantern? So this is the, you know, see, Man of Steel. So this is the third film, and we've got magic.
Well, you've got to keep in mind, because Doctor Strange has already hit, people already expect magic in it, so they have free reign to do so.
Yeah, but magic from a different realm of reality is a little bit different from the gods, you know, the Greek gods, you know, actually being a thing. Because here's Ares,
mm-hmm.
And by the way, I thought the misdirect on Ares was pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't when he showed up at the end and there was the reveal of who actually is Ares, and like, oh, okay, that works.
And it's one of those, in hindsight, it couldn't have been anybody else,
right?
But that was in hindsight.
Yeah, all the pieces were there, but they're not. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Hey, you know, they didn't telegraph it.
Everybody in Hollywood, that's how you do a twist. You don't you don't foreshadow it. You set it up and surprise us.
Right. Yeah.
and how the sword wasn't the god killer, she was.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now
that was a little
interesting. It's and the reason for that is because she's Child of Zeus. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
They went with the new 52 thing.
Well, they did both.
Yeah.
Which actually, if you're paying attention to Rebirth, they're changing all of it now. Because
Rebirth,
there's been
she
so many.
Doesn't know where she comes from.
Exactly. The reveal. I mean, she's actually. I think in one of the early issues of the Rebirth title, she puts herself into the lasso to find out where she's from, and turns out she doesn't know where she's from. I mean, so we at the beginning of the movie we got the formed from clay and given life from Zeus and all that, and at the end of the movie there's the reveal that she's a child of Zeus, that Zeus actually is her father. I'm really hoping that they don't go with that. I'm hoping they don't continue with that. I'm hoping that if they continue forward with that whole thing where now there's more than one story of her origin in the movies, that somewhere down the line we might get whatever is going on with Rebirth to make the whole thing line up. Because I don't want her to be a child of Zeus. I thought that was a stupid idea from Azzarello, and I still think it's a stupid idea.
Though,
because it's the whole, everybody's got to have daddy issues.
Though, to be fair, that would fit in line with Greek mythology and what we know about Zeus.
Well, if we stick with she's Zeus's kid, in Wonder Woman 2, she could have mommy issues with the next one because Hera could be mad. Hera can come back.
Linda Carter plays Hera.
Oh, that'd be nice.
We put Linda Carter in as Hera.
Well, okay, but also bear in mind that they gave themselves a couple of different routes they can go here.
Yeah.
Because Ares is the last god. He killed them all off. So you can basically walk away from the god storyline completely. And it doesn't matter that she's Zeus's daughter. That's a thing. Ta-da. Okay.
Yeah, it's I'm actually on the
level playing field is Ares, so I can win. Awesome. Okay. And then it's done. Or you can then bring the gods back and then have, you know, somehow bring them back and do a thing. But, you know, this is of all the things that they could have gotten wrong with this movie, this is, to me, is such a non-issue.
It doesn't
fundamentally change who the character or the portrayal of the character that we get here. It doesn't. It's kind of like any one of the jump over to the Marvel movies. You know, they've changed things from canon, from the main Marvel, you know, 616 universe all the time.
Right.
And this is the kind of thing where it's like, okay, sure, whatever, because it doesn't fundamentally change the nature of the character.
Right. And you've also got to kind of, you could have the multiverse theory that there could be various versions. Cause I mean, we're already going to see, we've got two versions of Superman, two versions of the Flash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the big screen version and the small screen version. So yeah. there could be multiple universes, different versions, and we're just seeing one version.
Well, it's all Barry Allen's fault.
Yep. Everything's Barry Allen's fault.
I know. Just slap him.
Curse you, Barry Allen. Well, I don't know. After the end of The Flash this season, we may not have Barry Allen around for a few episodes at least. Okay,
right.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to discuss a little bit of the complaints and the controversy and the hand-wringing. Oh, no.
Who have we not offended this week with this movie?
This movie, depending on how you look at it, you know, if you look at it sideways, just All right. So we will discuss that and the finale of Gotham when we come back
Hold on. Don't be excited there.
If you unsubscribe to our podcasts, our legion is doomed.
I'm meteorologist Brian Busby. If you're traveling to a convention this weekend, especially if you're a cosplayer, it helps to know what the weather's going to be like. Rain and fur don't mix very well now, do they? That's why every week, Sci-Fi for Me gives you the weather forecast for every city hosting a convention. Those we have on our list, anyway. And that's worldwide, not just in the United States. It's part of our commitment to bring you content you won't find anywhere else. Just click on the conventions tab over at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Jedi, Sith, Tauntauns, no matter which side of the Force you claim, we are your go-to holocron for all the latest Star Wars news, rumors, and innuendo. Imperial Intelligence has got nothing on us. We've got your salacious crumbs every other Sunday at 6 p.m. Central U.S. exclusively on Sci-Fi for Me TV.
SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse. And may the Force be with you.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon, or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
We have 52 reasons to listen to this podcast, but they may change in 6 months. Now back to the Rogues Gallery on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Back on the Rogues Gallery talking Wonder Woman, and I've said my piece. So you were saying, Mindy, you were noticing something about Ares.
Oh, well, for me, when they did the plot twist that Ares, or who Ares was for the bad guy here, when his character first showed up, I kept looking at him like, I recognize him. And because he's the actor who played Professor Lupin from Harry Potter, who's really a nice guy and you really, really like him, that having him as the bad guy was... He did a great job. He did a great job, and it's great to see a guy that I, you know, plays a nice guy be a bad guy at the same time, too. But, and I had also made comment that now that my mother knows that Professor Lupin is in this movie, even though he's a bad guy,
right,
she wants to go see it. Not for anything else that it's the movie is,
yeah,
but because it's him now.
My son kept asking, does Ares wear the armor? Is Ares in the armor? Tell me, does the armor look good? Is Ares in the armor? He's really excited about Ares in the armor. And when they revealed, what is it, Sir Francis, I think is his name, or whatever.
Something like
yes.
That.
As Ares, I thought, are they going to put him in the armor? What's it going to look like in the armor? And
right.
It actually kind of worked. Of course, by that time, you know, it's CG armor, most of it. But I thought... Okay, yeah, it still works to have him as Ares, even in that form, you know, because there was a lot of rumor that Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to be voicing Ares, and people were thinking, well, is this Ares going to be all CG? Is it going to be this thing, or what's going on? But I think they pulled it off pretty well. I thought, you know, from a creative standpoint, from a story standpoint, the actor is not imposing.
Mm-mm.
You know, you don't expect, because Jeff mentioned the animated Wonder Woman movie. Ares in that movie is a big, substantial looking guy. And in this movie, Ares is not, you know, but I like the way they presented it, because Ares sits there and says, well, you know, it's not about physical power. It's who they are inside. This is who they are. We just, you know, I just make it all kind of come out.
Push it over here.
And he said he just whispers.
Yeah.
He was merely a whisper behind them. He wasn't like hands on.
And it's not a physical thing anyway. So by that token, it works, you know, having somebody who's not physically imposing playing that character. I thought it worked really well.
From the costume standpoint, I would have preferred him not rip off the face part, and I would have preferred him almost to keep his face covered, but then you're dealing with you'd be dealing with speculation that he's all CG, you know,
yeah,
and not
right
real wearing the suit. But I get why they did that, to rip the face off.
Sure, yeah.
I just preferred the face on.
Well, it's the same reason why, you know, Tony Stark pulls the mask off, or Spider-Man loses his mask, is because you've got...
Or why the Power Rangers open their masks.
Yeah,
in the
you've
movies.
Got actors, and they're getting paid to be seen in these movies. And, you know, if you don't take the mask off every now and again, you don't really know that's who it is. Tim, what
And I
you?
Like how he formed his stuff from sheet metal, like just random stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
I thought it was really important, and I think very, very well handled, the fact that Ares was very clear that this wasn't, the gods didn't make man fight. It didn't give us an excuse to look away from our own history. You know, it wasn't like, you know, oh, you get a pass because the gods made you do it, which in mythology is actually a thing that happens a lot.
Yeah.
Like, you, oh, well, you know, the gods kind of made me do it. It was our fate. This never looked away from the fact that, you know, he was there whispering, but the humans made the choices. And if you look at World War One, from a historical standpoint, leaving aside the massive deviations from history that this movie actually involves, we'll ignore that first because it's a comic book movie, not stare directly at the comic book movie. But at the same time, in terms of storytelling, in terms of power, it always left those terrible decisions on us.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a scene where Diana confronts the generals, and she's like, why are you here? Why aren't you out there fighting with your men? Why are you letting people die when you're not on the line? You know, this was a real legitimate complaint. This is a real legitimate thing that happened, is that, you know, so many of the generals sat back in London or some other city and just kind of went, yes, well, we'll send a few thousand men over there. It never took the human, the bad things that humans do away from us, which I actually really appreciated.
Yeah. I like also the fact that they've presented Diana as the outsider. Mm-hmm. And if anybody, well, some of you weren't around when I wrote this article, when David E. Kelly made the attempt to put Wonder Woman on television a few years ago. They did. Tim and I have both seen that pilot. That pilot was.
And Cary Elwes did not want to talk about it.
No, he did not. That was the one thing. He's like, do you want to talk about Wonder Woman at all? He says, no. and I got the little British head shake with the no. No. One of the things that I wrote about after that movie, I did an article. Here's how you make Wonder Woman work. One, you do not make her Bruce Wayne or Tony Stark. And if you look at the Trinity, the DC Trinity, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, everybody keeps talking about how Superman is the alien. Superman's the alien. Superman's the alien. He's the ET. Well, he's not.
He grew up on Earth.
He grew up on Earth. He's an adopted son of humans. He grew up as part of humanity. This is his thing.
He's a Kansas farm boy.
He is, exactly. Bruce.
With superpowers.
Bruce is the orphan. Superman is the adopted son. Wonder Woman is the alien.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of being the outsider, being the person who has never integrated into society, is dropped in here fully formed, and she's looking around like, what are y'all doing?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she does in this movie. Tim's right, that scene where she confronts the generals, and she just says, well, of course we're going to go save the city, or wait, why aren't you fighting with your men? All of these different things. Where, you know, and you know, she's in there putting on the dress. She's like, how does a woman fight in this dress? You know, all of those little observations about mankind and humanity in modern society that does make her the outsider without making her a parody of herself, without making her stupid or senseless or, you know, oh, you just don't understand because you're the woman. None of that. That's not there.
Mm-hmm.
She's there because she just absolutely does not understand how this world works. And she's just like, we're all crazy. And in some cases, we probably are.
But then there's also the clear dichotomy that she was looking at. Here, Ares was trying to convince her that humans are naturally going to fight and do these evil things on their own. And then here she sees Steve Trevor and this ragtag bunch going out of their way to save humanity.
Right.
And so that had to basically say to her, you know, it's not all bad.
Right. And she even says that when she decides to go. They can't be all bad.
It's an important type of archetype, the outsider looking in, the character that allows the writers and the audience to take a look at whatever it is. So it was Data in Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That character, that, or Spock in the original series, that character that can look at us and make the observation that basically is, why are you like this? What is it? What, you know, what is the humanity thing that causes this? And to dump a character like Diana in one of those wars, like, well, okay, yeah. Is, you know, there is no good war to drop someone into where you're going to sit there and go, oh yes, this is always going to be perfect and justice, and, you know, even World War II, of course, the good war, the quote unquote good war, you know, there were so many bad things that happened on, you know, that we got that in Captain America, of course. Mm. But to have that ability to look at humans and go, what is wrong with you? and to have answers. I mean, that scene where Steve tries to explain and he can't.
Yeah.
Because there is no good answer. You know, when the answer is sometimes we're awful, that's not an answer. I mean, that's not an answer that anybody wants to give because it's a terrible answer. It's true. But and the thing is that we try and be better. And everybody, all the heroes in that film tried to be better. Whether they succeeded or not, of course, is the nature of the story. But yeah. You know, that's what made them heroic.
And we get two fish out of water stories here in this story. It's not just Diana, but although she is a fish out of the water for most of the story. We also get Steve's fish out of water perspective on Themyscira.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it worked well that we had that they were both learning from each other and growing with each other, not only to support their eventual romance, but to support their friendship and their camaraderie and their unified vision of, hey, let's do this together.
I like the fact that when Steve is on the island, his goal is to get back to London with this information that could stop the war. And when he's there on the island, his main concern for them is, you guys are in a lot of trouble if the Germans find you. It's not, oh, hey, look, there's an island full of babes, and you're all helpless, and I'm going to rescue you. None of that is there, which is good. You know, but although some people have pointed out, wait a minute, if the Germans showed up in the longboats, where were the big boats after them, mm-hmm. behind them? You know, where were the steamships? Do not stare too... Yeah, I know.
Well, we don't even know where
Themyscira is. It's a trap.
Because of all the fog.
Yeah, and that's what it was. It's the fog. They were all lost in the fog.
As long as you have something to blame, right. You're good.
Well, see, the thing is, you know, there are so many places where this film could have gone sideways. One way or the other, in how it treated Diana, how it treated the subject matter. It could have gone full on leftist, feminist propaganda, you know, women are better than men type of thing, which some people were wanting, or it could have gone completely the opposite direction, you know, because, you know, Wonder Woman has bondage origins and, you know, all of the, I mean, there's so many different places where this could have gone completely wrong.
Or people could have got offended that she got ice cream.
Well
given in this day and age, yeah. Well,
yeah. Or, was it gluten-free? Well,
it's the ice cream and the babies, you know, and whatever. But see, the thing about it is, though...
You gave Supergirl ice cream, you need to give Wonder Woman ice cream.
And that's a Geoff Johns thing right there. That had to be Geoff Johns doing that. But see, the thing about it is, though, this movie, I think people going into it, given the fact that Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman both had, let's be generous and say, mixed reactions, I think people were expecting Wonder Woman to go off the rails. Because we were hearing from the very beginning when Patty Jenkins first came on, this movie is a mess. This movie is in trouble. This movie is having problems. This movie is having story issues. And we heard how much of a train wreck it was going to be in the middle of all of this. And it wasn't. And she kept saying, no, it's fine. We're okay. Everything's good. It's all good. And, of course, you know, who's going to criticize the woman director? Because you immediately get bashed if you assume anything's going wrong. It's a catch-22. Mm-hmm. Yes, women... Women need to be given the same opportunity as men for all of this stuff, creativity. I get, you know, and I don't have a problem with that. I want the best director for the job, whoever it is. And in this particular case, Patty Jenkins delivered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she did a fabulous job with it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what else that she could do with Wonder Woman 2.
And talking about the whole fish out of water thing, on both sides, as Geoff pointed out, it led to a lot of... It wasn't an awkward, forced humor, but a lot of great humor, which, unlike the two previous movies, this was not 2.5 hours of brooding.
Right.
this was actually a fun movie to watch, almost like the Marvel films are.
Yeah.
It did feel like a Marvel film. I was half expecting Stan Lee to show up at some point.
You didn't see him? He was in that one scene?
he's always said that's how you fix DC movies is to give him a cameo.
Well, I think even at the end when we were watching through the credits, part of me was, I think I even said it, I'm waiting for them to sit there and have the little, you know, they want to thank this, you know, this country, that country, whatever. Thank you, Stan Lee and Marvel, for teaching us how to actually do movies.
Well, see, the thing about it is, though, everybody, and this goes back to the Richard Donner tribute earlier this week. You know, Wonder Woman, as far as we know, I don't know where Zack Snyder's head has been with Man of Steel or Batman vs. Superman. But this is the first time that Chris Reeves' Superman has been acknowledged as an influence in the current modern DC movie mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it matters. I think that's what's been missing from the other films that we've had so far.
I think they had an opportunity here to recognize something, that the idea of rooting superheroes in the real world doesn't lend itself to.
Yeah.
If you have, you know, okay, so with Man of Steel, you have the adopted son. And this was, in many ways, it was an identity-finding movie, okay? And it was handled very, quote-unquote, realistically in a lot of different ways. Some of it was emotional, and there's a lot of physical stuff. The problem with that is that there's no room in that kind of story for the whimsical. There really isn't. It's not that kind of story. That's the kind of story you're going to tell, and that's what Snyder set out to do with that movie. There's no room for the whimsy of Christopher Reeves. There just isn't.
Yeah.
And here, because you, by making a movie that's set involving magic, you are automatically, you're in completely new territory. You can't tell that kind of story here. You can't. Mm-hmm. By default, once you've got the gods are real...
Well,
you're automatically pulled out of that story. So that gives the writers, and, you know, Snyder was one of the writers on this thing.
Well,
so that gives them the ability to step outside
of that
box that they put themselves in, that Snyder put himself in, and it didn't help. It didn't. It was a box that has caused a lot of backlash.
Well,
here, they open the box.
Well, and talking about that, I mean, you look at what's going on with the Justice League now. The rumor, and it's only a rumor. And now, let's establish, you know, and stipulate, reshoots happen on these things all the time.
Yeah,
it's part of the package anymore. You don't always just shoot everything and you're done. You plan for these contingencies. You plan for, okay, well, we need a little bit more here. They have this built into the schedule. They're going to go back and they're going to shoot more pieces as they get into post-production. They figure out they're missing something. Well, with Justice League, we have Joss Whedon writing new scenes and shooting new material and supervising the post-production in the aftermath of Zack and Deborah Snyder pulling away following the suicide of the daughter. And there is a very, very, very active rumor that the reshoots that normally happen on these films are super extensive. Like, there are a lot of them going on for Justice League. And, of course, the rumor mill being the rumor mill, a lot of people are wondering just how much of Zack Snyder's original vision is going to survive, Joss Whedon having his hands on it, even though the official line is Whedon is only in to finish what Zack started, and it's Zack's vision, and he's maintaining that and all that. But you got to wonder, because Joss Whedon does a completely different kind of film.
Well, somebody had pointed out an article to me online that said that all these that there are these extensive reshoots going on, but it was actually Zack Snyder says actually laid out here's the things that need to be reshot,
right,
and handed that off, and so
and,
but
you know, and like I said, there you know, again, it's really a rumor, right. It's a rumor, and the official line is, and it's very very likely that Joss Whedon is just going and you know checking off the list that Snyder left him, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But still, you've got to wonder what this is going to do to Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
Because now we've got confirmation that Robin Wright is in it, mm-hmm. playing Antiope, which has got to be the Mother Box scene. It's got to be the flashback to the Mother Box being left on Earth with the Amazons. Because the Amazons have a Mother Box, the Atlanteans have a Mother Box, and then the humans have a Mother Box. That's the beginning of Justice League.
And the elves were left some, and the dwarves were left some.
The orcs didn't get any.
That's why they're
and
so
the
mad.
Orcs didn't get any.
That's right.
Well, they say the humans, but which humans?
Yeah. Yeah. Ah.
That could be kind of a political battle right there for the Mother Box.
Well, and I think, I to Tim's point, this does open things up for DC and Warner Brothers and read that Geoff Johns and John Berg to take the DC filmed universe in a completely new direction.
One that's
actually more comic book movie rather than movie based on a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody else not like their new logo? Their new longer intro with all the characters?
Oh, I don't like Marvel's new one, and at DC's I didn't really pay any attention to because the actual DC logo is back to being an actual DC logo, so I was fine with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But this also is a chance for Superman to finally show up in these movies because Kal-El is dead. Superman still has not shown up in these movies. I will make that contention to the day I die. This mm-hmm. is not Superman. Now that he's dead and he comes back, this is the opportunity in the overall story where you can turn him into Superman and you can make him the big blue Boy Scout because of what he's gone through, whatever story, you know, hand of the writer, whatever. He can come back as Superman.
But will Amy Adams still love him is the question.
Well, sure, because that's what the story tells her to do.
Exactly. As long as it's in the script.
Yeah. But I think this does open things up for a big course correction, a little course correction, a series of course corrections. There could be all sorts of stuff that they could do with these films now that Wonder Woman has opened that up and said, yeah, you can make a fun movie. And you can make, you know, you can introduce all of these different fantastical elements because it's a comic book movie. Have fun with it.
Well, I would contend that. Well, I'm going to
throw a little grayness into that because this proves you can do it. Snyder and Deborah and Zack Snyder invited people onto the set of Justice League way back when they started shooting.
Yeah, last January.
And made a point of saying it's lighter. So they were already reacting to the negative feedback. They were already having that. But the question I think a lot of people had about this one was, we don't have Justice League yet. All we can do is speculate. All we can do is go off those early set visits and the rumor mill and all the things. And the rumor mill is designed to say how awful it's going to be, just like it said how awful Wonder Woman was going to be.
Yeah.
This film, because we actually got to see it and go, aha, they can make something that's light and dark. I mean, this is in many ways a very grim movie, but it understood that the balance between the horrors of war has to be those moments of lightness and sweetness and innocence.
Yeah, yeah, you gotta have a balance.
And you were talking about Superman not being in the movies already. I would contend that we've already seen Superman in the movies. However, we called him Captain America.
Well.
And all I can hope is that, you know, they've taken a look at that and said, hey, we can do this Boy Scout thing and make it work.
I think so. And I think you're right. I think for Captain America, you know, when in Chris Reeves' realm, when he looks at Lois, because we sat and watched Superman the other night, he looks at Lois and says, "I'm here to fight for truth, justice, the American way," and she laughs in his face. She's like, "Get out! Are you serious?" Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Well, sure." You know, he's in earnest because he believes, and that's the thing. When the character believes it, whether it's Superman or Captain America or Wonder Woman or any of those things, if they have a conviction and they believe that conviction, then the character can work in whatever environment you get. The Superman that we've had in the Snyder movie so far, he doesn't believe in himself yet. That character has no convictions, no depth at all, or whatever. He's just there.
He just exists. He's just a guy with powers who wants to make the world a better place, and that's about it.
He wants to hide from the world. He doesn't even want to be there.
Hmm.
And that's not Superman.
True.
But anyway, yeah, but we're talking about Wonder Woman. Any other thoughts that you want to add?
I like the S.H.I.E.L.D. callback whenever they were in the square, and Steve's like, "Here, grab this thing," and he looks at Diana, and he's like, "Shield," and she jumps up, and they literally do the thing like they did on Themyscira.
Yeah,
when they started going, when he was trying to explain to them what they were going to be doing with that, I was a little like, "What are they doing?" Lost on it, but then once it kind of came together, oh. Yeah, I remember that they did that on the island, and yeah, I agree with you.
And we did talk about, and during the break, we mentioning with Steve Trevor, we mentioned during the break the other connection with Captain America being the motorcycle scene.
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Right. All right. Now, given all of the stuff with the movie, it is not without its controversy. It got banned in Lebanon. I think there's a couple of other places where it's
Tunisia,
not being,
I think.
Is it Tunisia?
Yeah, I think Tunisia is one.
Yeah,
because she's Israeli.
But they didn't. They banned this one, but they didn't ban the movie she showed up in Batman.
Batman v Superman. Dawn of Justice.
Well, they were okay with that.
She's not the star.
She's not. She's not
carrying.
Still.
I mean, she's supporting role. Which,
and they listed something else that she had
she was
been in that they
well,
didn't.
Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
And that didn't. I don't recall any controversy about that. But she's the lead. She's the hero. You know, she's being presented as, you know, yeah. And you know, I've seen Wonder Woman is feminist propaganda. I've seen Wonder Woman isn't American enough. She's not patriotic enough. She's, you know, she's too white. She's not a person of color. She's a person of color. She's not white. I mean, all of these different things. It's like enough already with the identity politics.
Mm-hmm.
She's a comic book character.
Well, okay.
She's a superhero.
But again, we've talked about this before. Remember, the loudest voices on the internet are not the majority of people.
I know.
The people who went to see this movie, the vast majority of them went because they wanted to see a Wonder Woman film.
And some of them
they went because they're a comic book fan. They went because they're a mother or a father or a son or a daughter. They wanted to go see the movie, and they weren't thinking about this stuff.
Right.
They weren't thinking about the identity politics or the gender. They were going, this looks cool. I mean, for, you know, the debates, I read some of the articles. We for the folks at home who listen, we post stuff on Facebook to ourselves about various articles and things like that that talk about these films. And I read a bunch of these articles. And in a whole bunch of them, I was just like, could someone just shoot the person who does the headline? Could we just take the... I mean, and I feel bad for whatever poor person has to do the headline, because you know they've got to hate their life.
Well, and that reinforces, because we made a New Year's resolution, 2 years ago now, 3 years ago now, no clickbait headlines.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do
them. I just look forward to this, seeing a headline that says, "You won't believe the headline we used to get you to click on this."
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I read one of them. I want to say I think it was the New Republic, and the headline. I didn't particularly care for the review. But the review was fine. I just didn't like the writing style. Okay, I mean, the very last paragraph of this review, the last couple paragraphs, they decided to get into, you know, a little bit of politics and whatever. But that's the headline. The vast majority of this review doesn't have anything to do with that.
Right.
And that's the headline about, you know, whatever it was. But it's Wonder Woman, guys.
Well, and you know, the more the, yeah, the
let
more
it, let
important
it be
thing
a superhero movie.
Yeah, but the more important thing out of this, and Tim and I talked about this earlier this week, is not only the fact that now we can establish fully 100% certain that a female superhero lead can work, can be successful, can blow the doors off the box office.
And Captain Marvel can stay on the
Captain
schedule.
Captain Marvel is coming next, because we had sat there and we said, because we talked about this on Level 1187 a couple of different times. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why, yeah, the speculation has been everybody was looking at Wonder Woman. Yes, we have Captain Marvel, because there was a lot of hue and cry. We need, where are the women? Where are the women? Where are the women? So Marvel says, we're going to do Captain Marvel. Well, where's Black Widow? Where's Black Widow? And I even said, you know, we said it a few times, a number of us said, they're waiting for Wonder Woman. They're waiting for Wonder Woman to see what happens there, and then all sorts of decisions are going to be made after Wonder Woman.
I remember
Wonder
that,
Woman
yeah.
has done $220 million in the first weekend, first week,
yeah,
mm-hmm. Worldwide. It's a huge hit. And now,
well, yeah, and if you look at the other female-led superhero movies that we've gotten, they've been Catwoman, Supergirl, and Elektra.
Right, but see, and that goes back to something, you know, because when Ike Perlmutter says a female lead movie won't work because Catwoman, Supergirl, which are, what, now 30 years old, 40 years old, mm-hmm. now we finally
have... Oh, yeah. Catwoman's only 10 years old.
Well, Catwoman's 10 years old, but
Supergirl... Well, it seems older than that.
Supergirl was, what, 85?
84.
Mid-80s.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was a long time ago. So, now you've got a new superhero film... In this modern era of superhero films, with a female lead, and it worked, and it was successful, and nobody's really upset about it, you know. This is a good thing. So now I want my Black Widow movie. Get on
well,
that,
yeah,
Feige.
That is the sad thing. As much as I'm excited about a good Captain Marvel movie, you have to sit there and go. Guys.
Yeah.
Well, people still want to know what happened in Budapest.
That's the perfect entry point for that. Give us Budapest. Mm-hmm. Do that movie. Or do the Black Widow Winter Soldier movie.
Mm-hmm.
When they had their encounter in Iran. Give us that story. Or do both of them.
Or Black Widow Hawkeye.
Well, that's Budapest.
Well, I think it's just really important that the argument that you can't have a female-led superhero film is done. There are people who are still going to say it.
Yep.
There are people who are going to say this is a fluke or whatever it was. There's always those people. But the fact of the matter is, it's a female-led film directed by a female director. It works. It's good. Shut up.
Yeah.
In other words, if you have a good movie, people will see it.
Move on to a new story.
Yeah. Well, and yeah. And,
if it's a bad movie, people won't see it.
That's what it goes back to. Story, story, story. Yeah. The fact that it was a good story. If it had been a terrible story, it wouldn't matter if it was directed by a woman or not, starring a woman or not. If it was a bad story, it will not perform to expectations of the studio. We saw it with Batman vs. Superman. It was a terrible movie, some people thought. And it did not make them, for all of the money that it made, it didn't make $1 billion like everybody thought it was going to do. You know, everybody thought it was just going to go gangbusters, and it didn't. And it box office first week, second week, dropped 83%. That's a really hard hit for a studio to look at and go, this was our big movie, and it's essentially a failure in some respects. Wonder Woman is not a failure, and Wonder Woman opens up the opportunity. We're going to get Joss Whedon to do a Batgirl. We're going to get Captain Marvel. Who knows what else? Sony has announced Silver and Black with Silver Sable and Black Cat as part of the Spider-Man universe. It's not going to have Spider-Man in it. Well, I mean, but, you know.
I know.
But it's still.
They can run with it now.
They're starting to realize that they can take those chances. They can do those stories because Wonder Woman succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right. and in the horrible flip side of this was that if it hadn't succeeded, it would have the excuses from the studios would have been, well, we've been telling you for so long that you couldn't have a female superhero movie.
Yeah,
and see, we were right. And part of me just wants to go up to every one of those people and go, oh yeah. Oh, yeah?
All right. And on that note, we will, our way out of here. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And this programming note, I don't know when the next time we're going to do a Rogues Gallery because all the seasons are done. I guess...
Sometime you should talk about Gotham. But
here's my take on Gotham. It's still a stupid show. I don't know that it's a Batman story. Comicbook.com came out with a theory that it's actually Owlman's origin, and I'm liking that a whole lot more than thinking that it's a Batman show. I don't know. Jeff's the only one that saw it. I saw the finale. I finally caught up. It's still off the rails. Just the whole thing.
From the previews, it looks like it's calming down. But from what we saw in the finale,
no,
with Solomon Grundy emerging and with tiny Batman fighting people and Catwoman getting a mentor and the Riddler being frozen as a centerpiece in Penguin's bar, I don't know.
Yeah, it's still a mess.
But I'll still watch it.
Well, until we turn Thomas Townley on it. I tell you, we're gonna weaponize his recaps, and he'll kill Gotham. Well, maybe we should let him loose on Arrow first. All right, that's gonna do it for us here. Thanks very much for listening, folks. If you've got opinions on Wonder Woman or any of the other DC film and television projects, you can send us a note, roguesgallery@sci-fi4me.com, or leave us a comment on all our social media. That's gonna do it for us here. We will take to social media to let you know when our next Rogues Gallery is going to be. We may be folding this show into another show. I don't know yet for sure. We've got some plans in the works for various different things. In the meantime, you can check out our other podcasts. You can check out our TV shows over on YouTube. And coming to our Twitch channel,
woo-hoo,
live Dungeons & Dragons gameplay on Monday nights. So be sure to check that out, twitch.tv/sci-fi4me. That's going to do it for us here. Thanks very much for listening to the Rogues Gallery here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
This has been a presentation of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Copyright 2017 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.